This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. And we're very pleased to be welcomed by Peter Hussey, senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, to comment on remarks from a retired United States Air Force general, John Hyten, born 59, 11th vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. However, his career included commanding the United States Strategic Command, 2016 to 2019, and the Air Force Space Command, 14 to 16. Peter, a very good evening to you. General Hyten has been speaking of threat. I believe the threat includes strategic threat. How so? Good evening to you, Peter.
And good evening, and thank you, John and Gordon. General Hyten was given an award by the National Defense Industrial Association, and a number of us went to his dinner. And this is what he made a point. He said, in the late 1990s, 97, 8, 9, Mr. Putin of Russia changed Russia's nuclear doctrine to one including not just massive use of nuclear force, but using threatening the use of a limited number of nukes in early in a crisis or a conflict in order to get the United States to stand down and not fight at all. And he told us that in discussing this with other leaders in the United States government, they said, oh, that's only for domestic consumption for the Russians. It's not serious. And this went on for, I would guess, 15 years or so. And until we figured out that, yes, he does mean serious business when Mr. Putin talks about escalating to win, where he said, I'm going to threaten to go nuclear and you're going to stand down. And the problem with that is not that it is dangerous, which it is. It is if we then, in a crisis like Ukraine, stand down and take our nuclear deterrent off the table, take our conventional deterrent off the table, take all other NATO countries' deterrent off the table, and then say, well, we might give you some military equipment, but we haven't in the past, and we gave you blankets, and then one administration did give them weapons. You've undermined your entire deterrent, and you just gave Mr. Putin a green light to do what he needs to do. And as General Hyten told us at dinner, our job now is to restore deterrence. That's not easy. As you know, John, in 1990, when Saddam invaded Kuwait, we had 5 months to prepare. And when we went in and lightning speed took care of business, everybody in Russia and China said, wow, America has an enormous capable deterrent. And so we established deterrence that way. But I don't particularly recommend going to war as a means of deterring, of establishing your deterrence. But boy, it's a tough job when you've lost it, which we have.
Peter, a follow-up on this. Deterrence would look like what, in the general's opinion? What would be adequate deterrence?
Well, an adequate deterrent is, first of all, a totally modernized nuclear deterrent, both conventional, regional, and long-range strategic, which we're underway doing, but we're late to the party, so to speak, would also mean on the conventional side, modernizing it with the Joint Strike Fighter and the B-21 and other things. Again, we're late to the party. To give you an example, our Air Force today is the oldest in its history, and it is the smallest in its history. The reason is we're retiring old stuff that's very expensive to maintain, to get, save some cash, to use for research and development, to build new stuff. But the new stuff doesn't come in until 2029. So as he has argued throughout his career as an Air Force general officer, we need to go fast and faster. And part of the whole idea of an acquisition reform is to do that. That, John, is probably our most fundamentally difficult thing because we're scared of failure. And as he pointed out, the rocket we used to begin the Apollo project had failed 12 consecutive times when John Kennedy announced, we're going to go to the moon. Can you imagine announcing we're going to rely on a rocket that's failed 12 times? The 13th test succeeded, and a plaque to that success is just outside the vice chairman's office where General Hyten worked in the Pentagon. And he told that story of the fact that we have to be willing to push the envelope. And if we fail, we fail. We got to keep going because those 12 tests, the rocket blew up, the satellite blew up, everything. We had to start all over again from scratch. And we had an extraordinary group of people that were willing to do that. We don't do that, John.
Gordon, you have a question today for Peter.
Peter, Reestablishing deterrence is not only difficult, it's also risky, because you have to change the mindset of your adversaries. Yes. And we have taught our adversaries not to take our warnings seriously, and now we're not even making the warnings, so giving them the feeling that they can do what they want. What do you, apart from the weapons acquisitions that you talked about, what do we need to do to reestablish deterrence in the minds of Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping?
Most importantly, besides acquiring our own capability and credibility, get our allies to do the same. We can no longer have a free ride with some of our friends. Some of our friends are so worried about our deterrent, like Korea and Japan, they're talking openly about getting nuclear weapons. In fact, we had a big conference just a couple hours ago, which I attended, on which that was the major subject of. We had all these former arms control negotiators from the United States talk about the fact that we need to reestablish deterrence so that countries don't say, hey, I'm worried about the United States, I'm going to go get my own nuclear weapons, whether Korea, Japan, or Ukraine. That probably, Gordon, is the most important thing, that our allies enhance their conventional deterrent, and we enhance both our conventional and nuclear, but also stop telling people what we're not going to do. We've said all during the Ukraine crisis and then in Afghanistan, we said, this is what we're not going to do. And then we showed restraint, thinking the other guy will show restraint. That's not how deterrence works, as you know. Bad guys are like the wolf around the corral. You give them a couple sheep to eat, tomorrow they'll be back for the next two. Okay? As you know, that's the life of what we've looked at in terms of strategic deterrence for this entire century, is when you concede and show restraint, the bad guy takes more and pockets the concession and moves for the next concession. And we have done that with respect to not only Afghanistan, but Ukraine, unfortunately. And the bad guys have acted appropriately.
Recently, the debate started in Finland and Sweden, as you know, Peter, yes, to join NATO. Upon that fact being broadcast in the news, the Kremlin said, if NATO embraces Sweden and Finland, we will put tactical nuclear weapons into Kaliningrad, or we will deploy tactical nuclear weapons. That intimidation worked. There was no response. There's still no response. It's as if we didn't believe it. Do you believe the Kremlin when it says that it will do that in the event that Sweden and Finland join NATO?
Oh, absolutely. I would guess, Gordon, that the nuclear weapons have been there before. Okay, the Iskander missile is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It is very, very fast. It gets to Warsaw in like 6 minutes. So my view is they've already done it in the past, and we probably believe that they will do it, but we have to answer it by saying we won't be intimidated. That's exactly what I was talking about. If you stand down in the face of these threats, the threats will continue. And we will basically have proven Mr. Putin right that he can intimidate us.
Therefore, you're looking at a situation that's already too late to catch up on. The Russians also threatened strategic nuclear weapons, I believe, right before the invasion of Ukraine, if my memory serves correct. And there was no response to that either. And now they're threatening to use, well, let's put it this way. There is the rumor that they'll use WMD in Mariupol, perhaps chemical weapons. We don't know. They've often entertained the idea of using actual nuclear weapons on the battlefield. It's part of their Soviet inherited to the Russian doctrine. Do we believe it? Do we have a counter to that?
Well, we do believe it, I think. But the question then is, the counter is not very credible because it would go to the strategic level. We have gravity bombs we can drop from airplanes that are the theater systems. We were going to develop a cruise missile for the Navy. That wouldn't come in the inventory until 2030, but that was canceled in the budget that the president submitted to Congress just recently. So we've never taken theater nuclear weapons seriously since the end of the Cold War, when George Bush 41 withdrew them all from our Navy ships and took them all back from Europe, which, by the way, we had thousands. And the Russians still, unfortunately, have thousands. And the issue here, John, is you have to have a very credible, General Haitham pointed this out. I don't want to manage a nuclear conflict, he said. I want to prevent nuclear weapons from ever being used, which means I have to have both a formidable nuclear reserve and a conventional capability. And that's where you restore deterrence. But you don't restore deterrence by, remember in December, the president said, let's have Ukraine join NATO. you can say, yes, that's a good idea, bad idea. But then we didn't take any steps to move in the direction where NATO would have to be defended and have its own weaponry. You don't do this in a matter of months. That takes years to do it. Remember, in 1994, we said we'd come to the defense of NATO, of Ukraine. Britain did too. Russia said, well, you get rid of your nukes, Ukraine. We'll leave you alone. We won't go after your territory. We did not prepare Ukraine for the eventuality that Russia would break its words. Okay? We basically went to sleep in the 1990s, as General Hyten said. He warned his fellow officers and his civilian counterparts, this guy is serious. And they said, oh, it's for domestic consumption. And we didn't take it seriously. As one general, General Herensack, who's now retired, Garrett said at a seminar I hosted, he said, we went on a holiday. He said, we went on two holidays. Acquisition holiday, we stopped buying stuff. And we went on a thinking holiday. We stopped doing the kind of strategy we needed. He said, we went on a double holiday. And he calls it a holiday from history, which we did. Gordon, unfortunately, and now we're trying to catch up.
Gordon, you have a question. We have a couple of minutes.
Peter, it's not only Russia that's making nuke threats. It's also China. And the pace of the Chinese threats have increased in the last 10 months or so. It seems to me that this is now a double-barreled problem, both Moscow and Beijing.
It is very much so. In fact, China announced 2 days ago they're going to accelerate out of the 300 silos they're building for missiles, they're going to accelerate 125 of those. And I will give Victor Davis Hanson a shout out here. He said, let's not talk cavalierly about these issues. But he also said, Russia and China are talking cavalierly about this. They're using these threats very explicitly and almost casually. And that means you got to take it even, you have to be serious about it. Okay, which means his point about not being cavalier about whether or not the threats are real or not. They could be bluff, they could not be. I think we have to take them seriously. And I do think both Russia and China respect force and power and strength. And you have to have that both verbally in strategy. You have to exercise it in terms of what you do with their military forces. And you have to buy the stuff necessary to implement a credible deterrent.
Final question, Peter, quickly.
Yes, sir.
As the conversation started again about tactical nuclear weapons in the fleet.
Yes, so the Navy doesn't want it. That's one of your biggest hurdles right there. And to be fair, the Russians, Lavrov said yesterday, oh, no, don't worry, we were not going to use nuclear weapons. At the same time, the day before that, a senior Russian military officer said, oh, yes, we were contemplating using nukes on board ships in the Black Sea. When we invaded Ukraine. So you pick whether you want to believe these guys or not. It is a dangerous situation. They are playing with fire. The thing is, strength does impede their recklessness is the way I would end it, Gordon.
Peter Husey of the Hudson Institute, Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.